This is chapter 37, and we're going to be looking through the life of Joseph this morning. How many of you think back when you were a kid, had a dream, or have a dream, maybe you still haven't gotten there yet, a dream of what you wanted to be when you grew up? You got that in your mind? I was sitting there thinking about that this week. My first recollection of like having that thought as a kid, I dreamt of growing up and being a mechanical dinosaur operator. And honestly, at my age now, I'm kind of disappointed that that's not an actual career path that I could have chosen. You know, like, I had this picture that by that time in life, there would be giant robot dinosaurs that you could drive around. I don't know what you would do with that, how you would make money in it. You know, I don't know if, I have no idea. But I remember thinking, like, that would be a great job to have, right? And most people have those kinds of dreams of something. You know, you look to the future and you see something that you go, I want to be that, right? Some picture maybe your dream is to grow up and have some kind of a career. Is you want to be a pilot, or you want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer. Maybe your dream is, I just want to grow up and be a mom. You know, that's whatever that dream is that you have that's out there. And I would contend with you this morning that whatever that dream is that God has put on your heart, God loves you exactly how you are. But he loves you too much to let you stay that way. The story of Joseph is a story of change. That what we are is not who we're going to become. And sometimes what God has in mind for us next is so far out of our thinking that it's just not anything that we think about. And so as it is, sometimes when we think about change, it's like a dirty word. We don't like change. Because sometimes we find ourselves in a place of comfort, and we know God is calling us to something different. I'm just going to walk us through the story of Joseph, and I want that theme of change to be just kind of on your mind as we look through the story. It's a long story. It covers about 6 chapters, 8 if you include much later in his story. So we're just going to kind of pick up through it. In Genesis chapter 20 or 37, we are introduced to Jacob and his sons in a much bigger way. And one of those sons, the youngest out of the brothers, was a guy named Joseph. And when we first really meet Joseph, Joseph is 17 years old, right? Like he's a teenager. And in chapter 37, starting in verse 3, this is what it says. It says, "Now Israel," which is Jacob, that's his dad, "loved Joseph more than all his sons." Like, this is the beginning of a soap opera drama. Like, that's how you begin As the World Turns, right? You know, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a varicolored tunic," or a multicolored robe. "And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, so they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms." Right? This is a family that is deeply caring towards each other, right? Like, I mean, that's, no, I mean, these guys despise the little brother. And if you know, I was the little brother, but if you were the older brother, you may have the, you know, or older sibling, you may understand this, right? You know, the little one gets away with everything, right? And as rightly we should. So, I mean, that's just the way that it, you know, that's just the way that it is. And so the story of Joseph is that Joseph doesn't really help matters a whole lot. See, I mean, Joseph was, he was 17. And so what we see here is we see Joseph being 17 in this point. And some of you are working your way towards 17, and others of you have come out of 17. And all of us understand that 17 is just, it's just a different age, right? And so it says in verse 5, "Then Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more." Okay, this is one of those odd dreams. Is there anybody in here that like pretty much always remembers your dreams? Something, you know, those? Are any of you the kind of people that you remember your dreams and you tell everybody about them? And you're going, I don't really care that you were getting chased by a wild jackrabbit. That doesn't like, what? It didn't, it's in your dreams, right? So, you know, sometimes those dream things can get kind of annoying. And so we see in verse 6, he said to them, please listen to this dream that I have had. Like he wants to be connected with his brothers. He wants to tell them about it. And this is what the dream was. He says, for behold, we were binding sheaves of wheat in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf. A little while later, Joseph's going to have another dream, and he's going to say, I saw all these stars and the sun and the moon that were around there, and my star, all the other stars, revolved around them. Basically, what Joseph is looking at is he's taking this dream that he's seen, and he's explaining it to them, and his basic understanding is like, everything revolves around me. Why? No offense, he was 17, right? Like the world revolves around you in that phase of life. And teens don't deny this, right? You know, the world, I mean, it is, and we have kind of carried on this motif of that the world revolves around me. It's now why there's people my age and older that use things like MySpace and Facebook to tell you what they had for lunch. Nobody cares, right? You know, we don't. But Joseph has this kind of thing like, man, you know, what is this? What, and he's just kind of in this place of questioning. He doesn't know any better. He just tells everybody around him, look, what's the deal with this? And so he tells his brothers. They despise him for it. He has this other dream. He tells his brothers again, and he tells it even to his father. And in verse 10, he related it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come and bow ourselves down before you to the ground? And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. The previous dream that he had, the brothers said something similar to him. They said, are you actually going to reign over us? Are you really going to rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. They looked at him and they said, are you really going to rule and reign over us? I mean, you're the younger brother. You don't get to sit on top. You don't get to be the big dog. You don't get to have the place of honor. Even though they knew in their hearts that their father had already basically given him that. He had spent lavish amounts of money to produce this coat of many colors. I mean, think about it. You live in a day where all of your fabric comes from wool. I mean, if you shear a sheep and you make something wool, do you have the ability to like change the color of that? Well, that's some pretty serious work to make multicolored stuff other than just wool brown, right? So I mean, it was a lot of money that had been invested in this coat, and it was a picture that was going to remind him that this was not the coat that was intended to be the one that was just out tending the sheep. This was the one that was to be the one that oversaw all the shepherds. Like, you're going to be the big dog. But even his father looked at it and said, "I don't understand this." So the story goes on that his brothers went out to go take care of the sheep. That's what their job was. That's what they did. That's what their family was about. They were shepherds. And so they went out to go take care of the sheep. And dad said, hey, little boy, why don't you go check on your brothers? And so he went out to the place where they were, or where he thought they were going to be. They weren't there. Somebody said, oh, they're off in this other place, which was even further away. And so he went to go find them. And we pick up the story in verse 18. It says, when they saw him from a distance, and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. Now, all of us have had conflicts with our siblings, right? Probably we have not authentically plotted their death. Maybe you have, but you know, generally speaking, that's not the case. I mean, these guys hated him. And they said to one another, here comes that dreamer. Now then, come, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits, and we will say a wild beast devoured him. Then let us see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben, who happens to be the oldest, heard this and rescued him out of their hands and said, let us not take his life. Reuben further said to them, shed no blood, throw him into the pit that is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him, that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him to his father. And so it came about when Joseph reached them. See, he's walking all the way up and they're plotting against him. When he finally reaches him, reached his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the multicolored tunic that was on him. And they took him and threw him into the pit. Now the pit was empty without any water in it. This was an abandoned well, if you will, that they had dug to get water for their sheep and that they knew where it was. And so they had got Joseph. They took off his outer garment. They threw him down into the well. And this older brother had in mind to come back and rescue him because he knew this wasn't right. This wasn't okay to do this. And in verse 25 it says, then they sat down to eat a meal, and as they raised their eyes and looked, behold, a caravan of Ishmaelites was coming from Gilead with their camels bearing aromatic gum and balm and myrrh on their way to bring them down to Egypt. These were salesmen coming from the east who were heading down to Egypt. And they see them, and Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. That would probably look bad if we killed him, right? And his brothers listened to him, and the Midianite traders passed by, and they pulled him up and lifted Joseph out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. Thus they brought Joseph down to Egypt. Joseph, at this point in time, he's 17 years old. He has dad's favor. He's got expensive clothing. Life looks bright. It looks good. The direction that he sees his world going, his dreams, his hopes, everything seems to be like, this is good, this is right, I can see this happening. And at this point, his world revolves around his dreams and himself. And so Joseph, as he's seeing all these things, is just going about normal everyday life. And then all of a sudden, tragedy happens. And his dreams are clutched and removed from him in the same way that his robe is removed from him. There's a crisis that takes place in his life that Joseph is now in the place of going, why is this happening? Surely I don't deserve this, right? Like this can't happen. I'm a good guy. Why is this happening to me? We've all encountered this type of a crisis of faith, where the world seems to be looking good, seems to be looking right. Our dreams seem like they're working the way that we feel like they should be working, and we're moving in that direction. Then all of a sudden, something happens, and our world is changed. Maybe the application letter to the college that we were intending to go to comes back and says, no. Maybe it's a dear family member that we're relying upon, and all of a sudden they get a bad diagnosis in a doctor's office. Maybe it's some unforeseen tragedy that takes place. Whatever it is, all of a sudden, our seemingly dream is shattered and rendered from us and pulled away from us. And so it is with Joseph, that his dream of raising up and being as his father was and running the sheep herds and taking care of all these things is snatched away from him. And he is sent down to Egypt. There's a lot of the story in this, and we're just going to be breezing through it, but we pick back up with Joseph when we find him many years later. He's probably in his mid-20s at this point in time, in chapter 39. And it starts in verse 1. It says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his entire household, and all that he owned he put in his charge. And so it came about that from the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him there was not concern in himself with anything except the food which he ate. So Joseph goes down to Egypt, and he becomes a slave. That's his first thing. He's just sold as a common piece of... In their day, slaves were like just a piece of machinery. It was just something to accomplish a task that you have. And he was just sold as a common piece of machinery. But he functioned in such a way that he was always working hard. He was always walking in integrity. Everything he did with excellence. And it was not with a blind eye that Potiphar saw that. So he took Joseph and he appointed him as overseer over everything. So he's still a slave, but he's at the absolute top of the food chain. He essentially has given him a robe of multicolors again, just in a slave sense. He's at the top of all of it. And so everything Joseph puts his hands to, God blesses. So even though Joseph's life and dreams, in their day, when you became a slave, there was no getting out of that. And you were a slave. That just became your lot in life. And so Joseph had looked at his lot in life like often we do when trials come and we go, okay, this is the reality. What can I do in this? How can I beef up in this? What can I, that Joseph now realizes, because he's a slave, the world doesn't revolve around me. Right now it revolves around Potiphar. And so I've got to make sure that I take care of this guy and do the best that I can. And because of that, God blessed everything that he did, such that Potiphar's house was just blessed. His fields were blessed. His business endeavors were blessed. And Potiphar didn't worry with anything except what food he ate. At the end of verse 6, it also has an interesting statement about Joseph. It says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. That's Hebrew for the dude was a stud. Okay? That's what that means. When if there was an ancient GQ magazine, Joseph would be on the front of it, right? Like that's what Joseph was. He was a stud. And not only was he intelligent and a good leader, he was good looking. And it came about about after these events that his master's wife looked at him with desire at Joseph, and she said to him, come and lie with me. I can't say that in the sultry voice that probably that phrase came out with, right? Now here is, just think about this. This is Joseph, right? Joseph's in his mid-20s. He doesn't want to be a slave. He doesn't deserve to be a slave, right? And here is, if this is the captain of the guard, Pharaoh never allowed ugly people to be in those kind of positions. So we can safely assume that Potiphar was of the beautiful people. And as being of the beautiful people, he was probably married to the beautiful people, right? So Potiphar's wife was, she was not ugly at all. She was probably gorgeous. And so here is Joseph at a very low place, a high low place in life, right? He's still a slave. And here is this beautiful woman saying, I want you. Why not? Sure, yeah, go, Joseph, you deserve more than this. Sure, go for that. But look what it says in verse 8. It says, but he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. And he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I. And he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil? And then look at this. And sin against God. God enters the story of this in this narrative. Because God was with Joseph. And we see here the mind of Joseph, that Joseph realizes, I'm not being blessed just because I'm good at this stuff. I'm being blessed because God is here with me. How can I sin against God and do this evil thing? But see, this was not simply a once and done thing. In verse 10 it says, as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. This was not, you know, this wasn't just a once, you know, she tried tempting him. This was a continual thing for Joseph. Now it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household were there inside. Uh-oh, right? Remember I told you, this is good soap opera material right here, right? He goes in, there's nobody looking. And she caught him by his garment and said, lie with me! Exclamation point. And he left his garment in her hand and fled out of the house. She grabbed onto him and said, come on, hunk. And he said, and literally ran out of his clothes to get out of the house. I mean, this is a dude that is like desperate for righteousness, right? He is going, there's no end. I mean, bolts out of the house. As such, he is following God. He is being obedient to God. He's looking at God and saying, how can I sin against God? God does not want me to do these things. Even though the world would look on and say, Joseph, we're not going to blame you for it. I mean, look how bad your life. You're a slave. Sure, you're in a high level of being a slave, but you're a slave. Take what you got offered, right? That's what the world would be saying towards him. And Joseph is saying, no, I can't do that. I got to follow God. I got to do what God does. But listen, the story of Joseph teaches us something. That sometimes when we follow God, it costs us greatly. See what happens. When she saw that he had fled and left his garment in her hand, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought, talking about her husband, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came in to be with me, and I screamed. When he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside. And this is the accusation that comes to Potiphar. And of course, Potiphar is furious, but we can deduce something from this. Potiphar does not believe his wife. How do we know that? Because there's a continuing story of Joseph. If Potiphar believed his wife, this would be the end of the story for Joseph. Joseph would just be... Why? Because he's just a slave. And they have the right to do that. But Potiphar doesn't believe him. But he also can't just, you know, let it go. So he throws Joseph in prison. I mean, this just goes from bad to worse, right? At least he's a slave. He can still, like, get around and do stuff. But now he's a prisoner. I mean, he's in jail. And so it is that Joseph is in prison. Verse 19, it says, now when his master heard the words of his wife, which he spoke, he said, this, your slave, what he did to me, his anger burned. So Joseph, his master, took him and put him into the jail and placed him where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in jail. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. And the chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made him to prosper. Here we go again. It's this cycle. He goes, he's thrown into jail. If he had any freedom as a slave, that's taken from him. He's literally at the bottom of society. I mean, definitely not where he was anticipating his life was going to be. You know, when he was back 17 years old, he never said, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a prisoner in jail. That wasn't what he was thinking, right? But at that point in time, his world really revolved around him. Now, we've seen through the life of Potiphar that Joseph has began to look up his eyes and begin to see that the prosperity that's coming about from him, the gifts that he has, the talents that he has, they have not come from him. They're not his own skill that's there. How can I sin, do this evil thing and sin against God? And so it is that while Joseph is in prison, he meets two guys and he encounters some more dreams. Dreams are a big deal in the Old Testament, because God spoke through dreams. And the honest truth is, around the world today, God still does speak through dreams. Joseph encountered two guys. He encountered the baker and the cupbearer of Pharaoh. Both two guys that had made Pharaoh upset at some reason. For whatever reason, maybe Pharaoh got a tummy ache or something. He was just upset with the baker, the one that made his bread, and the cupbearer was the one that would sip the king's wine to make sure it wasn't poisoned before it was given to him. And so they were brought, or they were thrown into jail where Joseph was, and both of them had dreams. And you can read those dreams there. But basically, they didn't know what those dreams meant. And so they were talking to Joseph, and they were talking about their dreams, that they just seemed strange and odd and all of that kind of stuff. And he begins to talk to them about this. He says, basically what he says is this. In verse 8, he says, "Then they said to him, 'We have had a dream, and there is no one to interpret it.' Then Joseph said to them, 'Do not all interpretations belong to God?'" Right? So he's going, look, God's got this. "Tell me your dream, please." So basically, Joseph has gone to the point where he's, you know, at the beginning, he was the center of the universe, right? Like, I'm the center sheaf, and all these things are going to bow to me. And look at this, and he's telling everybody about it. Now he's going, you know what? God, there's God is at work in this situation. And so, you know, listen, God, the interpretation belongs to God. So I'm going to bring God along into this conversation. You tell it to me, and me and God will do this. We'll figure this out. And so they do. And the interpretation of one dream is pretty good for one of them. He says, "You're going to be raised back up, and you're going to be put back in the care and the love of Pharaoh. He's going to be happy with you again." The other one thinking, "Oh man, this is great. You know, this is great interpretation. What about mine?" And Joseph looks at him and says, "Yours, not so much. Pharaoh's going to take off your head. We don't like that, right?" And a few days later, both of those come true. He restored the chief cupbearer to the office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Joseph's one charge to him as he gave him the interpretation was, he says, "Listen, when you are restored back to Pharaoh, don't forget me. Don't forget me." See, when we're at that place where we're at the bottom, like where Joseph is, oftentimes we are looking for somebody to put our hope in. We're saying, "Hey, listen, when I fall down, please don't forget me. Don't forget me." And there it is, he does. He forgets Joseph. Well, the story of Joseph doesn't just simply end there. Joseph is still in prison. In fact, the most estimate that by this time, many years later, he's probably in his early 30s, maybe 31 or 32. And Pharaoh at that time has a dream. Dreams keep showing up in this, all these stories. And the dream just seems odd. It seems disturbing, and Pharaoh doesn't know what it is. And so he calls his wise men together and tells them this dream, and none of them can interpret it. They don't know what's going on. And so it is that in verse 9 it says, "Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, 'I would make mention today of my own offenses. I've screwed up.'" And he says, basically he says, "Listen, do you remember that time that," I mean, you probably don't, "but do you remember that time you got kind of upset with me? Then you sent me to prison? You know, it's okay. I'm totally fine with that. But do you remember that time? Well, I met a guy there who can interpret dreams. And he might be able to help you." And so when these things were spoken to him, it says in verse 14, "Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon." And then check this. "And when he had shaved himself," and what? "And he changed his clothes. Then he came before Pharaoh." And he comes before Pharaoh, and there's a posture change in his life. And it says, Pharaoh said to him, I have had a dream that no one can interpret it, and I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Here he is. Favor. You are the man. You can do this. You're a stud. You can figure this out. You've got it going on, Joseph. And Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. Basically, I can't do it. I can't do it. But God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. God will do it. I can't. I'm not anywhere close to being in the center of the universe. You're trying to put me in the center of your dream interpreting universe, and I've been there before, and it's not worth being there. God will interpret your dream. And so God does. God does that. And so as Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, and he told him his dream, and it goes on and on. In verse 38 it says, then Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set on you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and he put it on Joseph's hand. And he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put the gold necklace around him. And he had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee. And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Or what does this have to do with us several thousand years later? Joseph, when he was 17, really just wanted to be a shepherd. He wanted to be a great shepherd. He wanted to be at the top of the game of being a shepherd. But that's what his dream was. But that was not God's dream for him. And Joseph really wanted to be the center of his own universe. And that was not God's dream for Joseph. And so Joseph's robe was taken from him. It was stripped of him. When Joseph became a slave, he rose back up to prominence. And he kind of had this understanding that, like, you know, this is bad, but God is here, and God is good, and God is right. But there still was this sense of, you know, it's still about me. We see that later when he's in prison. And so Joseph, his best intent at that point in life was just to be the best slave that he could be. But that was not God's plan for his life. And so his robe was taken from him when he fled out of that place. He was fleeing in obedience to God, but his robe was still involuntarily taken from him. And it was not until God broke something in Joseph in the pit, in the absolute bottom there, that we see a transformation that takes place. Because Joseph knew that God had good intended for him. And he had to trust God. And he could not do that on his own. And so in this story, Joseph loses his clothes 3 times. And that dude could not hold on to his clothes. But the 3rd time it was very different. When he shaved, he changed his clothes. And he went before Pharaoh and he said, Pharaoh, I can't do it. I'm not the king of my story. I'm not the king of my story. And guys, most of us, we want to be the king of our story. We want to determine what we are when we grow up and what our life looks like and what our dreams are. And our culture pushes us and encourages us that you can be whatever you want to be. There is some truth in that. But not at the neglect of saying, I'm not the center of my universe. God is. Do you remember what Joseph's brothers said to him after his first dream? Will you rule over us? Will you reign over us? At that point in time, Joseph was like, "Daggum right, you know, I'm the young brother. That's what it's supposed to be about. I'm going to rule and reign over you." At the end of the story, guess what God's plan was for him? To rule and to reign. But not from a posture where he was at the center of the universe. It was at a posture of submission to the plan and will of God. That God had a good plan for his story. That God was to be the center. That God was to be the king. And that Joseph was to look to him and to rule and reign out of that. Do you know what the first command of God to man was? Be fruitful and multiply. Subdue the earth and rule over it. The command of God, the first command of God, as it related to our world in relationship to what He had given us, was that we were to rule and to reign in this world. We screwed up when we said, "I'm going to put myself at the center of my story. I'm going to be the king of my story." And guys, every day we wrestle with that. We wrestle with the desire to be the chief architect of our story. The one that says, "This is what I'm going to be about." And God says, "Oh, really? I love you so much, I'm going to take this from you. And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt." But we buck it up and we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We keep going on. And we go, "Here it is. All right, this isn't exactly what I had in mind, but we're going to do this. We're going to make this happen." And God says, "Oh, really? Let me take that from you too." And quite often, it's not until we get to the bottom. Because at the bottom, we only have one direction to look. Up. And it's not until we come to the place where when we look at our lives and we look at our story and we voluntarily say, "God, this is my desire for my life, but I'm going to take this off." And willingly come before you and say, "God, I can't do it. You can. Your desire for me is to rule and reign under you." And looking to you all the while. Scripture describes the work of Christ in our lives, that He has adopted us as sons and daughters of the King. That's royalty. And in that, we don't get to look like royalty if we're still dressed like a shepherd. We don't get to dress and look like royalty if we're still look like a slave. We don't get to be royalty if we still look like a prisoner. And it's not until we get to the place where we are willing to take those things off and look to our Father who has authored our story and has a plan for us. And the honest truth is, guys, when we do that, it's going to cost us. It's going to cost us some comforts. It's probably going to cost us some relationships. But it is ultimately the will of God that we submit to Him so that we can look like what He has always planned for us to look like. Then as we begin 2014, everybody has ideas about what the year is going to look like. My desire is this for you, that God would enable you by His grace to look more like His Son Jesus, that you would voluntarily take those things off that don't look like Him, and that He would robe you in His signet ring, in His garments, in His grace, in His love, in His mercy, and that God would give you favor to rule and to reign over the kingdom that He has built in this world, and that we would do battle on His behalf, and that we would be a blessing to those that are around us. Because the very end of the story, is that Joseph meets his brothers again. They don't recognize him this time. And they're kind of scared of this number two guy. And Joseph looks at them, and when he reveals who he actually is, he says, "What you meant for evil." Guys, those times when those things are ripped from us, they're evil. They're evil. When innocence is ripped from us, when relationship is ripped from us, when comfort is ripped from us, all of those things are a result of the fall of humanity. They ought not be. They ought not exist. But what was meant for evil for us, God uses for good. That's what Joseph said to them. He said, because listen, if this had not happened, you would all starve to death. Those things that are ripped out of us, God allows those things in our life so that we can be conformed into the image of His Son Jesus. We can look more like Jesus. So that people later on in our life, as we submit to God as our King, as the center of our universe, we can then be a blessing to them. This is my promise to you, that 2014 is going to bring change for you. The question is going to be, is it that those things being ripped from you, that God is saying, you don't need this, I've got something better for you? Or is it you being willing to look at Him and saying, Father, these things do not belong to me. I cannot do it. The dream belongs to God. Your dream belongs to God. The question is, are you willing to let Him define it and interpret it? Let's pray together. Father, I thank you for your word, and I thank you for the message of your word, the encouragement of your word, the story of Joseph. I look forward to one day meeting Joseph and hearing what the journey looked like in his own life. And in the midst of that, Father, I can see Joseph in all of us, that you are taking us through a journey. That many of us start at a place where we have dreams and visions, and those things are altered. And Father, it's not until we come to the place of brokenness where we look at you and say, God, I'm sorry that I'm trying to write my story. You've already written my story. Bring me into it. That I can be obedient to your first command to rule and to reign in the kingdom that you have built, and to do it under your authority and submitting to you. And so Father, I thank you that you have a good plan. Father, there may be some here this morning that have been waging war against you. In their heart, they are the center of the universe. Father, bring us to the place where we have the same answer that Joseph had. I can't do it. I'm not the center of the universe. God is. Father, we thank you that you have done all of this in Jesus and have brought us by your grace into relationship with you. And so, Father, I pray that we would enter into this year with expectation of your good as we submit to you. We love you, God, and it's your name we pray. Amen.